it. So people imagine the technology, the hologram, is this thing that you can walk around and see all the different angles, and that somehow that might put goggles on, and then you're inside this simulation of an environment. People are already doing that with their iPhone. They're living inside it. And it gets, you know, tinier and faster and more synesthesia. Which would be, you experience a book as a movie. You experience a newspaper as a television show. You experience a television show as a newspaper. The media start getting all mixed up.
Yes, for example, I usually have many things going on at the same time, like you are not just reading or listening to music, you are doing,
right.
You are multitasking.
Yes. You were forced to multitask, at least in the 70s and 80s, before you had your iPhone. Now you have multiple screens. You actually don't multitask. The computer does it for you. You've got all these, you know, open pages overlaid on your screen. And you're just a little tactile finger moving yourself around the different the layouts, which each is a hologram.
Bob, with ION's new approach of answering on payday, is that an adjustment to the... our sensory ratios as far as eye and ear?
Oh, yeah. ION is moving us beyond people listening and imagining and listening on the radio and thinking and seeing the meanings and images that ION evokes with his answers. That's what's during cash flow. Now it's not sitting back imaginating or looking up things on the video. It is tactile interplay. You must interact with ION, who will create intervals for you to fall into, intervals of science and pausing. It's very involving. It's like ping pong.
Yeah, because I thought of it, what you were just saying, of the people you see along the beach that, well, we all see people that are really heavily involved in their chip landscape where everything is, you know, the hologram you've been mentioning. That's like... still going into more of a visual bias then?
No, it's not. Visual bias is black and white. There's no color in visual man. The book area. Once you have color, McLuhan said color is tactile. So the eye, we're a visual society, but it's a tactile eye. It's not the, think of the limited black and white visuality that people had for 300 years, say, with newspapers and books. That was their extent of their visual space. There's no visual space in the digital world. There's no book experience. Impossible.
Okay.
When you're reading a book page on your Kindle, you've got light coming through at you. You don't get that when you're watching, reading a book, an old-fashioned book. The light is bouncing off. There's reflecting mirroring going on. It's more, the light from Kindle is inside you, and you're inside it. It's called light through as opposed to light on. So you're not having, you can, from this perspective, the book is a very puny, limiting medium in terms of all your senses being involved. But you did have people reading books and then compensating with as much other kinds of sensory activity they can come up with. Senses, for example, opera comes in. They needed screeching acoustic space to balance off the book effect.
Hmm. So what ION is doing is we're moving to another level of using our tactility or our tactile senses. It's a adjustment of our tactile senses now.
Well, no, Ian said, Bob Marshall asked if there was tactility in the non-physical environment, in the guff, and they said no. So you've got the tactile and you've got the extension of the senses in the machines. I think that Ion is advocating what McLuhan called the heroin experience. You put on the whole universe when you take junk, take heroin. Whereas with LSD, you just see vast, you know, rapid scenarios of visual goodies, psychedelic colors and landscapes. You wear the whole universe. That is more approximate to what I want you. You're bigger than Saturn. You mold the whole universe. You make it with your mouth and your body language. So that is bigger than the media. Ion is here to give you experience bigger than the media.
It's like the media is obsolete because our enhanced perception is extreme. So we don't need this puny
separate sensory extensions. It is liquid flow. People want to flow. They just want to keep their thumb pushing pages, holograms past the screen. Incredible rapid exploration. So we have the ultimate sensory utopia going on, and then the media utopia. So the next thing is the ultimate experience and becoming a singularity. That's the next phase. And all the media are puny environments compared to whatever this thing that we're arriving at with our RNA drops, living water, interacting with Ion provides endless entertainment for free, relatively for free. I mean, don't you think that listing of music, we've never heard any voice say all these albums and say their key of G and all that stuff and all these songs. Somebody might have read off a list of songs, but not as fast as Ion did. You know, he probably said over 100 song titles. That's a new kind of ear experience, information overload experience.
Yes, and many songs I don't know, but sometimes, for example, when he said, you should be dancing, in my head I will be hearing the Bee Gees. You should be dancing.
Yeah.
Or Blackbird, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Like he's triggering all this, but like, very fast. Like,
well, you're compensating. You could say with senses, your ear, but no, he's actually, you live at the speed of thought. You have all these thought memories, and he starts spewing off thoughts, and then you bounce it off with retrieved multimedia versions of the title. You fill in. That's what you just described.
Yes, and I think it was like an example of what's coming. Like, things are going to be so fast, and our brain is reacting also to. For example, he's saying a list of songs, and the ones I know, I sort of hear in my head.
Yes, and he says a title. You think of the song. That may be a song that you associate driving in the car or in some environment, and it's electrified. Like, how come you heard all these songs? They didn't have that many songs to listen to back in 300-400 years ago. People didn't have these memories of songs. They might have 2 or 3 songs in the local town. You had massive recall happening. It was like an instant replay done to you.
Yes, I remember, I think in the novel, I read the character will go to the opera or to the concert every night to remember the music and then play it on the piano.
Yeah.
They have to learn it and play it.
And they just have that. They just have that music.
Yes, like a few.
You know, it makes, I'm thinking, okay, you think that the person is having a puny sensory life, but I think people, they engage their physical senses in other ways. Let's assume, well, not completely, people just aren't, people are having way more experiences, but they're numb. The chemical body 600 years ago, before the printing press, was probably quite involved in all the stuff it did. It perceived.
Yeah.
Let's assume that the intensity of experience is always constant. so you have a lot of extra details, but you get a lot of numbness to go with it to equal the amount of intensity someone had 700 years ago. I'm not sure. I'm just sort of making this up or figuring it out, but I don't know if there's any facts to what I'm saying. But the maybe people, they were puny back then. Ions, no, they were dark ages, and before that, people they would be involved with the psychic experience a lot more because they didn't have any visual boundaries. The human being, Jevrings used to say this: the human being has always been very sensitive and smart and adaptable all through our history. They've always been tuned in, so. It must be a different quality of experience they had 800 years ago. You know, same quality, but different intensities, which we don't have anymore. I mean, you read Dickens and the dinner of somebody. They just list 100 vegetables, in a Dickens novel. Now people might have a little jar of yogurt or a donut. Compared to what the bourgeoisie ate, Well, you grew up with that. Mexico is a little old-fashioned, so they do still eat a lot, right?
Yes. I was reading a book about
eating. What?
I was reading a book about Berlin on the turn of the 20th century,
a hundred years ago.
Yeah, there was so much poverty and so many people coming from all over Europe, mostly the East, to work here on factories, that many, for example, some families, they had like 8 children.
Right.
And in their apartment, they also had like chickens and rabbits. And because they needed the money, they will rent a sleeping space. The people had so little money that they just didn't pay their rent, but just for the space to sleep during the night because it's very cold, for example, in the winter.
Yeah.
And so they will have all these stranger people coming only during the night. And it's like a family with 8 children, chickens and rabbits, and all these people sleeping there, and it's like, God. And then all the horses, for example, and the toilets, they were outside the apartment, and there was like a toilet for 3 apartments, and the horses were on the porch behind the building, and there was all these, the apartments behind, were cheaper because they could smell the shit of the horses. And I was I was not aware of all these, for example, all the smells or all the things that imply to live like this. And they had to use, for example, coal to heat their rooms.
Right.
There was no heating, so all this.
A lot of sensory activity, a lot of noise, a lot of over information overload going on.
Yeah, the smells and the crowded spaces and
people getting mad at each other, people fucking each other in the corner. You know, it would be chaos to us. And that would, to them, we live a digital information brain chaos. They lived a physical chaos. Both requires a lot of sensory involvement, right? A lot of activity going on.
Yes, and for example, they will use the same water to for a bath, like I think once a week. and the whole family will bath on the same thing.
Wow.
So it's like, yes.
No, that's a good story. That shows you how sterile we are, what our neuroses are. I mean, I couldn't, the way I am now, I couldn't take that. I wouldn't know it. I wouldn't know what I have today. I've been changed. Yeah. I wouldn't know it.
Yes, that was their normal. I mean,
yeah, it was an invisible environment. They had no thinking about it.
And then the social classes were really manifested, because there was a lot of, in the poor neighborhoods, there were a lot of sicknesses and epidemics, for example, because, yeah, and all these insects, because of the way
it was horrible. And it was common back then. People's wives and husbands, they all die when they're 21 or 18. A lot of death going on all the time. Children dying in birth, you know?
Yeah.
Yes, I mean, yeah, many children die as children because of all these sicknesses.
Yeah. And they had to have a lot of children just to hope that a few of them survive.
Yeah, so... yeah, they didn't have the media. They had some newspapers.
And somebody would smoke and tell them, say a tall tale. They just went up to London and make up some bullshit, and they'd entertain people for the night, right?
Yes.
Or they'd drink themselves into stupor. I mean, here's Roxana, can't tolerate any other human being around her, wants to be able to listen to what she wants to when she wants to. Roxana would have killed everybody within 15 minutes. And she was suddenly placed there. She did a Doctor Who and was transported back to 1910 in Berlin. And Roxy, and then she's in the back apartment with the stinky horse shit. Whoa, and you're today's personality, which you couldn't be, but if you were, you would be... you'd die right away. You wouldn't be able to take it.
No, I'm not physical.
Yeah. And you smell strongly.
Yes,
and see, that's
very,
in a way.
I was very impressed. As I was reading that, I was very impressed.
Yeah, you were learning. You had a book that would translate this experience for you. Now, this is what McLuhan would say: the working classes were very sensorially involved. That's much sensory involvement. No perspective in that world. It's the upper middle class who got this visual snobbish perspective and lived in private rooms and had books to read. You know, this is the difference in people was extreme, and you could use the media knowledge of McLuhan to define the differences. And therefore, we've become, you know, people in the mid-20th century became neurotic about smells and germs and all that stuff, right? The housewife had to have all these cleaning detergents and stuff. I don't know if people are like that now. I don't know what they are. It's almost like we don't have any sensory life in the chemical body anymore. Not like they did 100 years ago.
For example, in some parts of Mexico, like I was doing some research of Maya textiles, and they had also like that all one room for the whole family, and in the night they put their hammocks. And
yeah,
during the day they take them away, and they also work on that same room, and they cook there, and they also have like pigs and chickens and running around.
Yeah. So, well, how did you take that? You lived in that environment. How did you handle that?
Well, they were laughing all the time. They were making fun of me because, for example, on the first day I asked them, where is the toilet? And they said, here behind. And I was looking for the toilet for a long time. I came back and I said, I don't find it. And they were laughing, like, anywhere you want is the toilet. It's like... and I was I didn't want to eat anything because I was like, oh, no, I don't want to go out in the night.
Yeah. Well, how did you wipe yourself when you had a shit in that situation?
Well, it takes some paper, but I don't know how they do it.
What kind of paper?
No, I would take toilet paper, but
you took your own, but they didn't have that.
No, I suppose they take some leaves or some,
right.
I don't know. Yes, it's like many things. I mean, you're not aware what it's like until you're in that environment.
Yeah. Yeah, we're pretty dumb perceptually.
Yes, and they were making fun of me because I was totally, I could not do anything. Like, they would ask me to make a fire, and I was like, I don't know how to do that. or to help them in any way, I didn't know how to do that. So they would make fun of me all the time.
How recent was this, Roxanne?
What?
How recent was this, Roxanne?
No, that was in 1994.
Okay.
Yeah, 20 years ago. Here's the story she told me. So they told her to go throw something out. Some
the water of the corn. The water, the corn water.
Yeah.
Because
so she goes
I could
out,
not do
throws
anything.
It.
So they assign things that usually the children do.
Right.
Like just throw the corn water.
Yeah, so she goes out someplace and throws it, but she threw it in the wrong place. It caused such a crisis, they had to bring over the shaman and get rid of the demon in Roxanna that caused that.
Really?
Yes, because
yeah.
Corn is very sacred, and you're not supposed to throw it on the street. You have to go behind and throw it and give it to the spirits and the, whatever things they believe that live. There.
And they did it. They did. The shaman came, and Roxy doesn't know what's going on. And they spray her, which shocks her because they sprayed her right in her face. You know, like she just got beat up, basically.
So he got some leaves, like a tree, and he was hitting me with the leaves. And then he took a big sip of some type of alcohol, and he spit it on me.
Right. Now, what you have is a clash of two ignorances there. They could not imagine you didn't know how to do any of that stuff. They didn't think they had to teach you or tell you anything. They thought you knew what they knew.
Yes, yeah. Because it's like basic stuff they do every day.
Right. And you at least know that, and they think you know that. They don't realize how different a world you've come from.
Yes. It's like I never felt so foreign, really, like.
Well, you felt outsider. They didn't like you. They laughed at you. They mocked you. You felt stupid.
Yes, in a way, we are very stupid because we could not survive.
Everybody's stupid. You take those people couldn't survive in a city. They'd be too alone. They'd too be isolated. They can't stay in a little place, an apartment, where there's no cooking or chickens and all the stuff they're used to, no noise. It would be very frightening to them to be in such an emptiness.
Yes.
And that's what she was telling me. She was telling me that they now that the big hotels are coming in, all these people are starting slowly to be not in their little villages and now working as maids in hotels. So they're caught between two worlds, you know?
Yes, and now they wanted to have a radio and a TV, and they changed
the
way
they
live.
Here's Roxy coming from the other direction. She's sick of that. She wouldn't want any, and they are yearning to get one. There's your media evolution going on there. You can't. The people will always want the new environments, no matter what.
Yes, the electronic environment.
Yeah. And so Roxy was helping an anthropologist. I think she was supposed to take notes about what was going on. Like, wait, I don't know what.
Yeah, about the embroideries, they have many types of embroideries that are, for example, in some communities, only one person could do that because the younger generations don't want to dress like Indians or.
Right.
Because there's a lot of racism. And so they were making some type of research before they totally disappeared.
It was a Noah's Ark. Yeah, you were preserving the old knowledge.
Yes, and I thought I was going to help them, to teach them something, and they would laugh at me, like,
Yeah, it's like, you know, it's like me trying to tell people about Ion. They would just laugh at me. What the fuck? You're ridiculous what you're talking about.
The tribe doesn't get it.
Right. Now, you did this for about like 6 months, right?
9 months.
Wow. So this is why she's in Berlin. She failed as an anthropologist assistant, realized it was hopeless, didn't like the job she had before that, and headed off to Berlin to become a study German philosophy. That was her solution.
No, there was also the Zapatist.
Yes, that was happening in 94. That definitely, yeah.
Yeah, the revolt started, and I was working with these Mayas, so...
Were you flirting with hanging out and helping them?
No.
Because they would find out that you were the guy they were rebelling against.
Yes, they would not be that aware of that, but.
But you knew it.
Yes, but.
Did you have any sense of paranoia about that? Because you have that photograph of you. You know, taking a picture of subcommandant, whatever his name is, the leader in a little town, you know, revving up the people, and you're on the side taking a picture. Were you aware or felt nervous that they could find out who you are and nail you?
No, because I was very naive.
You were naive. You didn't even know that. You didn't even know who you were.
I was like, I talked to them. And...
You what?
I thought if there's any problem, I could talk to them.
You could help them, yeah, mediate. I could just see it be like in a movie. You walk over, attempt to talk, and some peasant woman with a rifle will look at you and immediately realize you're a fucking sub and bat you over the head with a rifle and kill you. You know what I mean? This is like a scene in a movie. You'd walk over with your hand out, with the hand of peace to negotiate, and you'd just get smacked by some woman with a rifle and fucking shoot you, right? You know what I mean? That kind of outburst could happen.
Yes, but the only time I was scared, there is a community called San Juan Chamula.
Yeah.
And there is a church. You can only, you have to get a permit just to be at the entrance. You cannot go inside, but you can see from the entrance that they're doing some sacrifice of chickens and some old type of rice.
Yeah.
And so they told me not to get inside, and I went in, and they really just took me out. Like, they pushed me.
Yeah.
And then I was in the cemetery, which is outside the church, and I was looking at the towns and at the... They have some types of crosses on the trees, but it's not like the Christian cross, it's like the directions.
Right.
And I was just looking at these things, and then I turned around, and there was a bunch of them looking at me like very angry because I was in the cemetery.
Right.
And I was really scared, like, because...
You knew that they were mad, and they would not understand you're not knowing, and they could justify beating you up or something.
Well, I think it was like a lack of respect from my part that I was not aware.
But you didn't know.
Very sacred.
You didn't know you were being disrespectful. You didn't know until they made, by the way they looked at you, you knew, oh, I'm in the wrong place. But you didn't know that before, right?
No, because I was just being curious. I was just looking like I'm...
You're being visual.
I am autistic.
Yeah.
So I'm just like looking at the things
wandering around Frida Kahlo's backyard. You know, just run around your normal self, wander wherever you want to, little princess. And you couldn't see the invisible rules.
Yes, it wasn't like a disaster, so I said, well, I saw.
So what happened? You're scared. What did they do?
Nothing, but I was really scared because they looked very angry. Like I just went away.
You walked away. You ran away.
Then the anthropologist told me they almost lynched like a TV team, like a French TV wanted to film inside the church, and they just went inside and they almost got lynched.
Wow. Yeah. Now the funny thing is that you know, being a prisoner, she didn't know anything. Bert. She goes to Berlin, starts living there, and she doesn't know how to shop. She had maids all his life. She's just like totally an invalid, incompetent, unable to do anything.
Yes, but I'm non-physical, so I don't know how I made it this far.
You had help. Had non-physical help, Roxanne. Had non-physical help.
Yes, that way he said this song, "If We Can Help," what was the song? Like, non-physical is there. That was one of the songs we played tonight.
Yes, yeah, Billy Swan, "I Can Help."
I can help, yeah. So there they are helping.
Yeah.
But, I mean, this is just to make an example of how media...
Oblivious. We're oblivious of culture.
Yes, but also how the media has an effect on our sensory life and our perception. And
media is everything. Media, your environment does this. You're conditioned. Those people were conditioned by their rules. They would become mean and non-Christian by lynching you for walking into a damn building, you know? They're equally as jerks as you are.
Yes, but...
They do not tolerate someone being different. It doesn't even occur to them. Because they're unaware that the media makes people different.
They believe in this type of butterfly effect. Like, if you are there, maybe you can provoke some disaster or some bad.
Right. Yeah. You're a chaos butterfly. Yeah. See, so no matter where you are, you're conditioned by your environment. And you're made stupid in relation to other people. If no one's around and you can be as stupid as you want, nobody would notice. But once you start interacting with other people, that's when social mortar comes in.
Yeah, like the cobalt saying, it's better to keep quiet and let the people think you're stupid and not to talk and show that you're stupid.
Yeah, who says that?
It's like a saying of the Texan cowboys.
A song?
No, like a proverb or like a saying in Texas.
Oh, what is it? Oh, you just quoted it?
Yes, I quoted it on the chat line.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because somebody told me that they were told when they were going in the army in World War II, their father said, just stay in the middle. You know, hide in the crowd. Just keep a low profile.
Blend.
Yeah.
You speak up, you stick out, and then you attract attention, and then your character is assassinated.
This is what I do. God walks among the people to go to the beach every day, and they do not know, and I keep quiet. Don't say nothing.
you just eat your ice cream.
That's right. I have my ice cream. I look like a little greedy little rich kid. And they don't know I blew up fucking Chili. They don't know I did that. I did this. They don't know God is my personal right-hand man. They have no idea. But I am odd. Every now and then I seem to know something I shouldn't know. Hey, little B. Little B's where it's at. What do you mean? What about Yo Gotti and Little Walter and Little Boosie? Oh, no, Little B. Oh, the fuck's that white honky know about little B? We don't even know about him. He must be a god. Bob must be a genius.
Or do you interact with this parallel world tourist?
Yes. Yeah. I'm walking along with the most absurd thoughts of parallel world interaction. You know, I walk about 50 yards, and I know I've slipped in and out of worlds. I'm thinking, oh, I went over there. I went on the other side of the street, now I'm here. You know, I'm mapping my progress as I trudge along or float along. Now, I have noticed every now and then somebody is staring at me. I don't know what I did, but they're going, what the fuck is that? I mean, I might look like, who knows what I look like, but they're going along dreamily enjoying their vacation. All of a sudden, they're staring at me. What the fuck is that guy? What is he? Really staring intently at me. Who knows what I'm emanating? I've probably got a big, massive, a big, silly Alfred E. Newman grin on my head.
Or they're tracking you too, like the cab drivers.
Right. They're all CIA, and they're all walking around with their gadgets, and they're all going beep beep beep. Look around. Oh, there's a fucking KGB in there. Where's this KGB guy? You know, some I trigger off alarms all the time on their digital surveillance cameras.
Oh, they're just like tracking you. Like, let's say, just keep an eye on.
Yeah.
On that environment.
Yeah. No, Ian says there is a few houses down the way that have been spying on us for years on behalf of somebody, ever since Ian showed up.
Really?
Yeah, oh yeah, he's described them several times. They're like around the corner. And I don't know, I've never seen anybody spy on me, but somehow maybe they can hear these phone conversations. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Or Ion's lying, or it's nuts, who knows? Ion's a highly suspect.
We're all crazy, but it's so much fun.
Yeah. Yeah, Ion's a great organizer. He's a union leader of crazy people. He's an inspiration. He's the original crazy person.
Yes, and we discussed McLuhan.
That's the
ultimate type of mental illness.
That's right. Yeah, McLuhan's the ultimate mental illness. So let me look at the notes here. What I've got in my notes is I make note of Newton versus Leibniz. That's a big deal because that was an insight of how McLuhan took the eternal battle between Newton and Leibniz and it said one guy was a meteorologist and one wasn't. That was pretty neat. So that's written in big letters. And then I have kingdom of heaven via violence. And I have nucleation. These are ideas that I read. Dublin 1916 radio, the Easter Rebellion. Monadology as democracy. LaRouche writes about monads. Leibniz writes about monads. Hard to something civil war. And then over on the other side, I've got graciousness, that's from the next article. Okay, so there's not many articles, not many notes from this one. Kingdom of heaven is an act of violence. We're going to heaven is violence. Nucleation, monadology is democracy. And hard hats. Oh yeah, hard hats in civil war. That whole civil war thing. So that's what I. Just a few notes from this issue. But look at that! Look at that, Bert! Look at all those ideas. You haven't even seen so many ideas, let alone think them, right?
No. It's interesting. Yeah. Kingdom of heaven is violent via violence.
That's right. McLuhan says all activities, all information is breaking boundaries, and that's a violent act. You're crossing boundaries. Even the kingdom of heaven can only be entered by violence. And he says violence to our mundane image. So you have to wreck your own image of yourself. That's what a lot of people, they get Ion happening and they become antisocial, hide out, listen to this stuff, and have a violent dialogue with themselves for about a year. right?
And when you write Ecoland, what are you talking about there? Because today we talk about echoes.
Well, that we haven't gotten to that article. Where do you see that?
On the notes.
What's the date?
In December 68.
No, that's too far down. We'll get to that. Hey, we're no jumping ahead. I read a lot of stuff here.
Yes.
Oh, I thought it was already there because you also talk about, write about tribal, primitive, communism.
That's those articles. We just did the top line. See, July 16th.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
That's what we did.
I thought you were already down.
Hey, Bob.
We did nothing.
In that article.
Well, let me say this, Bert. Let me say this. Do you see on the far right? Are you looking at it, Bert, the page?
Yes. Yes.
You see the line on the top right? Underneath it says graciousness, war is macroscopic. Those are the line separates August 68 from July 68.
Ah, okay. That's what, yes.
You see, the line goes along and it goes under hard hats, Civil War. They're like blue. And then I have a little arrow to the left of hard, Hendides going both ways, arrow left, right. And then a line going underneath Leibniz. That's my crude line separating August from July.
It is the customized notes, yes. So graciousness is for the August then.
Yeah. Correct? All that stuff underneath there is, we'll see, systole, diastole. I think it's about equal to the July 68, or maybe a couple more notes. Not about the same amount of writing.
Yeah.
But it's spread out more. Tactility is heart, pulling apart, pushing together, systole, diastole. So so these would be things that I would write down to remind myself, that Newton versus Leibniz, McLuhan knew that, I never used these much, though. I never went back and looked at them much. Because I read and listened to so much McLuhan, he'd repeat ideas, and I kind of would remember it.
Yes. I heard that in there when he was, in that article you just read, in the Dew Line, about the Japanese wife would not reprove her husband, she would just rearrange. And I remember that, hearing that or reading that before.
Yeah. No, he's used that before, yeah.
I find McLuhan's reference to violence pretty interesting. It's not your, typical violent, what most people think of violence, because I remember hearing about violence as a probe to a new reality or something, I think he said.
Yeah, you're breaking boundaries. It's slang comes out of an identity crisis. Slang is finding new ideas while on the frontier where you don't have a full statement of what's happening to you.
Yeah.
So you have to make up new words. I mean, he says, he has a title, Education as War. Nobody fucking thinks education is war. Education is important. It's fucking peaceful. It's it's not war. I mean, what he said was outrageous.
Yeah.
If you had time and tolerance, you could read it and get the idea and then maybe agree with him. But, imagine reading. What?
I'm reading this. I was born October 68.
Oh, and you're reading the October 68.
Yeah, Rai returns to essence, Humpty Dumpty.
Yes, Rai returns to essence. That's me putting McLuhan wouldn't even know what I was talking about, but I'd be putting in my other holy offices information. You know what I mean? I was looking at the overlaps. University obsolete. There's one you should have fucking paid attention to.
Where is that?
Right in your birthday month. It's like I was writing an astrological hex. Anybody born in October 68 was subject to these ideas, and they didn't notice them. They were fucked.
Yes. The thing was, we're supposed to be ready in 69, so I said, okay, I'll come for 68. Everything is going to be ready next year. And here we are.
What? I didn't get that. You're in 69. What do you? Where did you arrive?
No, I said everything was supposed to be ready.
Oh, that's right, in 69. That's right. Yeah.
So I said, okay, I come for 68. Everything is going to be ready.
Oh yeah,
and you.
Yeah. That's right. You came forth to get on the bus in 69.
It's like we are going to be ascended. Everything is going to be cool. And
yeah, you were tuned into Bob Knowledge very early.
And it was a joke.
Yeah. You, now, didn't Ion say that you came forth to meet Ion or something? Well, remember they said that?
No, that I agreed to do this, he said. But I don't know exactly.
Oh, yeah,
what.
You agreed to be chief of staff for Dobbstown. Yes. And Bob, and I took my damn time. I took 40 years to show up to the meeting.
And like, report to Bob. What?
Yeah, you should have said, it's about fucking time. I'm waiting for 40 years.
This is like...
Yeah, it's pretty funny. But, yeah, we'll go through each one of those notes, and I'll explain whatever. I mean, I've got there Bush versus Saddam. He's saying back in 68 that generals would fight the future wars, you know, one general versus another. So then I realized later, oh, that's Bush versus Saddam. You know, that's a prediction coming true. I mean, World War II was not a fight between Churchill and Hitler. I don't think people thought, that's metonymy probably, but... people were not using those images like that.
Yes, but this Bush Saddam duel, it's really amazing in 68 that it was already there.
Yeah. I mean, remember, that's what people say, well, why are we going to war? Oh, Bush is pissed off because Saddam went after his father. You know, people did think that way about it because there was no real reason to have the war. So they had to come up with reasons. So, and Saddam said that he was going to wipe out Simpsons. He thought Simpsons were real. He said, we're gonna kill Homer Simpson.
Yes, but then we see already there the 9/11.
Yeah.
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 So, Bob, when did you take these notes?
Well, I would have done them in the early 80s. I mean, I got them in the late 70s. Maybe 79, 80, 81 in there, I had time to do it. But Bush, I went over them 20 years later. And that's where I put in Bush versus Saddam, you know? Even though that should be, unless I redid them again. See, I've read through them maybe three times. And, I maybe took notes and then maybe I made better notes or I didn't do notes the first time. But Bush versus Saddam, that has to be, 2005 or something.
Yes, but you told me the notes were the other color, the blue one.
Actually, the first Gulf War was in 90. The first Gulf War, where Bush, the...
Okay, yeah, that was Bush versus... Yeah, okay, so that was done in 90. Right. You see where I got hard hats versus Civil War? That's in blue. That seems to be the later pen.
Yes.
I know when I'd read them, I would notice things that I didn't notice before, and add them. So you thought I was going all the way down to December. That would have been, I would have had to say a lot more. But,
You're always ahead.
Yes. Yep. And the fastest rabbit in the hutch. But it was fun looking at this again, the McLuhan Dew Line, side probes here. And the little girl, wouldn't it be wonderful if everybody were blind? Then there would be no race problem. McLuhan goes, she was wrong. The little girl was wrong. The professor marks her life, marks her paper. He's saying it's not a color issue or something.
Yeah, I think he said something about a classification.
Yeah.
He also mentioned it earlier. I heard he mentioned about Karl Marx, something about he recognized the communism he was recognizing was before his time, but he didn't recognize the communism was taking place during his time.
Yeah, he grew up in Cyprus or some island. And when he came to industrial societies, because he was an outsider, he had perceptions where he could see the broad outlines. So he projected his own Corsican tribalism, pre-industrial tribalism in Corsica, on London. And he said, okay, we're all moving toward becoming like me, a Corsican. But he didn't know that was rearview mirror because he didn't see the hardware communism.
Mm-hmm.
He just saw chemical body communism. That's what he was hoping would be retrieved, or he called it move forward to that. He was against the bourgeois hierarchy, the classes.
Yes.
He was from Winnipeg. he was a Winnipegian with no point of view, no perspective, but he was adopting the Torontonian visual bias because it was a novelty to him. So he became a writer. So I think we'll just do, there's quite detail. We'll just do one a week. I can't do the next one. There's a lot there.
Yeah.
I have to do fucking Lewis now. I got to go to another class. So, wasn't that pretty interesting, though, for 50 years ago?
Yes. Just to hear the format of the newsletter would have made it interesting visually.
Yeah. You know, the Newsweek magazine guy says it's rather conservative, but that's just, they just saw the first issue. They get pretty radical, these presentations, the format.
So he experiments with that as well, huh? One was probably different then. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so we should play a little music, maybe. What do you think?
Yes.
Sure.
We got anybody here? We got
to keep the flow.
Yes, we must do the ionic flow. But we've got Beverly Peterson, Sarah, and I guess Michael, and then you two. That's it. Hardly anybody here. My class isn't very popular anymore. I'm like McLuhan. In the last years, nobody went to McLuhan's class. I'm like
they
that.
Listen
nobody
to the archives.
Yeah, well, you know, there's actually 100 people listening. I get Bill to look at the stats. And, you know, he can go monitor the other ways of people. And so way back, like 3 hours ago, there were 84 logged in on the chat server. So that he said that would be the IceCast and ShowCast. Some are on phone lines. And what was the other one? Okay, so he said 69 at peak, and that's at, well, I don't know what time his time, 9:50 p.m. I don't know if that's my time or his time, but at one point there were 69, and then it went down to 61 people, and then another 4 on ShowCast, and nobody on RTV. So there's many people listening, waiting for me to die. Waiting for me to fuck.
Good luck. Good luck for wait that week.
Yeah. Yeah. And there was, you know, while we were talking to Ion, maybe there's a bit of halting pauses because Ion was fucking talking, typing on the chat line to people at the same time.
Yes. Yes. He answered me as he was talking, for example.
You were over there fucking betraying me and distracting people.
Yes.
That will be noted. Yeah.
No, because he said this thing about the the kids, what was the word? I am sick.
Some idiot calls in. Some idiot writes it in quick. TJ, I think I remember that initial. That's about 4 or 5 years ago. Location, Los Angeles. Message, where the hell is James Martinez? Jesus. He died. James Martinez died. He walked into the wrong fucking department of ION, like a church, and the locals just stared at him and then fucking lynched him. He walked into the wrong room. Look at that. Mark D says, there is a great clue 25 minutes ago. Can you help with the timeline? And that was said about 4 hours ago, I think. I missed that one. I was thinking, I'm listening to the... Bob Fest, and I'm talking for the first 3 or 4 hours. Man, am I powerful sounding?
Yes, you were.
I was probably knew what I was going to do. It was all propped up. I had several worlds helping me. It was jacked up on steroids, on non-physical steroids.
No, there were different bulbs taking over.
Right, and I want to mention that. But, you know, what's funny is that you're part of the early hours where I'm noting you're emailing, you're communicating with us. And I don't know you, and I'm going, there's Roxanne in Berlin. And I would get it mixed up with Roseanne. But the somebody asked me, oh, yeah, Evan. Evan called, left a message and said, you know, I've been listening to whatever she was listening to, Emerald Tab or something. She says, you know, I think there's more than one ION or there's more than one JW. She's just beginning to notice that ION changes throughout a long session. And she says, I think there's something different. There's more than one ION was what she was saying. She had never heard me say a million times, yeah, there was. A JW, a different JW channeled through, you know, over 8 hours. Now, this ION is pretty constant, sort of, and ION is not coming through JW, it seems, right now.
Really?
How is JW typing and corresponding with the chat line? Right? The JW ain't sitting there typing.
Yes. No, that's true. Yes.
JW's not even around. I don't know where he is, but he's in the building in the factory where his body is. Wasn't that interesting that Ion said that the people there in the room there with JW don't see him with Ion? Did you see that? Hear that?
Yes, I heard that. I was listening in at the time. Yes. So it's like a cloak or...
Yeah, I know that ION can make humans not see things. So he calls it, he cloaks them. So he must have cloaked JW. Or JW's not even there and it's ION doing it and nobody can see ION doing it. You see, back in the tailgate, you listened to him, ION would leave and then we'd talk to JW. And it was always the rule that we'd do that. No session would happen unless I was there. And I would bring ION in. And then I would exit ION. And then we'd talk to JW. I haven't done that in years. The first time ION came in without me doing that was in the second or third McLuhan and Maui. February, March, 2011. And all of a sudden, Ion was there. And he shouldn't have been. And he wasn't supposed to come until the fall. And Andrew got really mad at me for he thought I brought Ion in. I didn't. But we weren't used to that. I didn't even realize what he had done. It just was surprised that he showed up, but I kind of forgot that. I don't remember thinking, well, how could he come in? I'm supposed to bring him in. How did he get here? I was too distracted with pissing off Andrew.